help you cultivate a more positive way of being. I'm Lisa Arnone, and now your host, Armand DeMille.
We do everything different around here. That was great. That's great.
Thanks.
Listen, you know, the way, it's the way you swing with what happens. A very wise man said to somebody, he said to the other person, now get this, I want you to picture this. Both of you, I have guests in the studio today. Picture the very worst thing that could happen to you. Picture the worst thing that could happen to you. And think about it. I mean, for almost everybody, it's going to be the loss of a child or something like that. And I almost think we should throw that out of the equation as one of the worst things that could ever happen to you. Because for some reason, people go bonkers over that thought. So let's say, other than the loss of a child, we'll come back to that later. Think of the worst thing that could happen to you. You got it in your mind, Audrey? I get a guest here in the studio. You got one in your mind? The worst thing that could happen? Worst. Can you picture it? Just nod yes, no. Yeah. Can you picture it, Lisa, right? The worst thing that could happen to you, right? Picture how you're going to survive it. Picture how you're going to get through that moment. How are you going to get through that time? How the next few months going to be? How are you going to pick yourself up after it? You get that? Now, that's a very good test of your mental stability. You see, when we think about ourselves, we think, and we talk to each other like this, you know, if you ever left me, I'd die. I would not be able to survive. I'd quit. Lovers say it so often to each other. Oh, darling, after this, there's only death. But they get through it. And you get through everything, in effect. I was watching a bug. It was just a bug. I was in a swimming pool. And there was this little bug that fell in the swimming pool. And it was flapping its last flap. You know, it was doing it, and me, good old me, you know, I swim over, I pick it up in my hands, I cup the water, I put it on the side of the pool, I give it a little breeze. And I realize this thing has been through this before. I mean, I'm not the first time it's fallen in the pool and gotten picked up or gotten out of the pool because it's struggling. It didn't go in the pool and stop struggling, saying, oh, I'm in a pool, I'm going to die now. No, struggling for survival. Odds are it was going to get out of it somehow. But when we don't sense our resiliency, when we believe that we are so dependent on any one thing that we cannot survive it, our mind gets in a little bit of trouble. So this is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone. We're looking at the positive mind, and we're looking at people and how people develop and grow. Now, at one point in your life, you may have exactly felt that way. You may have felt, I can't get through this next few moments. I don't know how I'm going to ever get through it. Do you ever feel that way, Lisa? You had that in your life?
Sure I have, yes.
And it was like, it was such despair that you say, hey, I'll hang it up.
It's I have felt like it, I want to say this right. It feels like it's not possible to go forward.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no door. But now when I ask you about it, no matter what you think, you have developed to a point where you know you're going to get through it.
Absolutely.
See, I know I'm going to get through. I know I'm going to at least fight my way through. I mean, maybe something bigger than me is going to come along and whop me in the back of the head when I'm not looking. And say, oh, no, you're not. But I know I'm going to get through. And having that feeling of not thinking you can get through, especially like we were talking about yesterday, with people who suffer with this feeling of being so dependent that they can't survive. Whew. Now, on some level, they're very lucky people. Because when they're attached, They're attached so magnificently, so deeply, so you get two people clinging to each other, you know? You get a clinger and another clinger, and you get two clingers together holding each other. Boy, that's got to be really sexy stuff. That's got to be really tight and beautiful and wonderful. But then when the clinging stuff starts to die, you know, that stuff they put in the clinging that makes it kind of wear out after a while, and now it's wearing out, and one person's unclinging while the other person's still clinging. It feels really rotten. And then when you finally separate, you believe you're as good as dead, because how could you have possibly died? Because every part of you still wants to cling. So you grow. And today, we're doing part four. Is this four?
Yes, it is.
Of our training. The training that I am doing is the training, this is at Lisa's suggestion. Instead of supervising and teaching just one or a small class of people, I said, let me tell you how I would teach a graduate class of psychologists or supervisees. Those are people who come for supervision, basically to learn how to use part of whatever I have to teach included in what they have in their own knowledge. So, and of course, it's this positive mind stuff, but it's, which does not mean a positive approach only. It means being able to see with a clear eye. So today, we want to continue this, and we're going to talk about the nature of what it is in us that doesn't want to grow. And by talking about that, we're going to have to get to that. We're going to start with the beginning of those of us who are growing. And the way we grow, and the way many of you are growing now, the many of you have developed yourself. Now, so there's a process. There's a process of growth which I think goes the following way. It's a process of learning. As you get older, you want the person, you need to understand your own mind and how your mind functions. Now, sometimes you seek out a therapist. A therapist is a tutor of the mind. They tutor you in your mind. They say, okay, this is how minds work, and this is how your mind may work. So you learn how to sort out your own thoughts and feelings so that you can pursue your goals. You acquire the skill of introspection so that you can continue along this path. Now, what is introspection? Introspection is the ability to see yourself in a mirror, to look inside and to say, oh, it's me creating this. So this is what you need to know about the three stages, what I consider to be the three stages of growth from one place to another, from one mind to another. First is, if you have a problem and you say, I don't know what's wrong with me, I always choose the wrong men. Okay? There's stage one, stage two, and stage three. Stage one is awareness. Stage two is knowledge. Stage three is growing. Okay? Stage one and knowledge. At the beginning of when you're trying to grow, the very first thing you have to do is to look and see what the situation is. So you have to evaluate the situation. And in order to evaluate the situation, you have to do one major thing, which is very important. Make no changes. The mind is a very funny thing. It likes to be invisible. It doesn't want you to see what it's doing. So it tries not to expose you, to let you see it, because if you see your hidden motives, then you'll tend to get rid of it. The mind doesn't want to be gotten rid of. The secret mind wants to stick around. We're going to talk more about that later. So the very first step is awareness. And awareness means, can I see this full picture? And let's take an example of it. Let's do the unhappy marriage syndrome. Okay, here I am unhappily married. I have three children who I take care of all the time. My wife is out all the time and doesn't come home, and she's dedicated to all of her clubs. I work in my factory, and I work like a dog, and I come home, and dinner is always just a little off, a little burned, a little shows that nobody really cares. I've been drinking a little bit lately. Because he kind of numbs the pain somewhat. My teenage girl daughter is getting nasty towards me for no apparent reason. My son He loves me so much, but he's mad at me too, and he beats up his younger brother all the time. And I come home, and the place is screaming, and this is my life. And I didn't think I'd wind up this way. Now, person with this, isn't that a sad story? That sounds miserable, right? Okay, so a person with this kind of thing, if they were to say it to themselves, even if they wrote it on paper, they would think they had to make change. Not true. The beginning of the process is to be aware and not change anything. To take out of it all the I shoulds and I should do this and I should do that. Remove it all and just see it the way it is. If you allow yourselves to see the entire map of your mind without making any changes, you're going to find that there are many more roads you could take than the ones you originally thought, which are so limited, which is, you know, I got to get a divorce. It's so limited. I got to find somebody else. It's so limited. When you show the entire map, you see many more roads, many more paths. So that's step one. Now, that's step one. If you do that alone, that's one thing. If you do it with a therapist like all of you who I'm teaching, right, if somebody comes to you, before you start making advice, get the whole picture. So at the very beginning, you want to understand in depth. You want to know how you value about things, how you think about things. You see, you want to kind of get a sense of you. And although there are similarities between people, everybody's kind of their own person. So it really takes quite a bit to understand them.
So I'm wondering if what you're saying is that the person becomes aware that the problem might not be the situation, but the problem might be something inside.
It's the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
It could be the situation and the inside, but without a reaction, without making a change. You know, Freud, when he started analysis, he had a basic rule. And his basic rule was make no changes. Do you know this?
No.
It was 5 years of therapy, and in the 5 years of therapy, you go in five times a week. But the first thing is make no changes in your life. Don't get a divorce. Don't make any changes. Right? Except I can come in here five times a week.
Yeah.
I guess that's a change.
Yeah, that's a big change.
But it was part of the process about not making changes. Many people go into therapy, for example, and the first thing they do is they make a change. And the change they make becomes so uncomfortable to them, the decision they make, that they could no longer afford to go to therapy. And in a funny way, it works against them. So one of the things that good therapists recommend is, okay, you're going to be tempted to make changes. Don't make any changes. Let's just see the whole picture. So seeing your whole picture is very important. When we do the program, The Positive Mind, and I do phone-ins, I don't get a chance to see the whole picture, so I guess. I guess from having this knowledge and experience that I've had over all these years, and I guess quickly into little spots, but really, that's why I'm not worth my salt as a therapist. See, because the exploration is more important, the looking at it further is even more important. I'm good for one time, but I'm not good on an ongoing basis because I don't have that expansive look anymore. I don't want to have that expansive look. That's for other people. That's for you folks to do. By collecting the information, you learn what it is that you may do, consciously or unconsciously, to contribute to the problem that you're having. You may say, you know, I woke up early in the morning. That's because last night I had four beers right before I went to bed. That's okay. Now we're going to remove judgment. We're going to take judgment out of everything you observe. Nothing is good or bad. Well, I shouldn't have had those four drinks or I would wake up. No. That's not the way this works. The way this works is you had four drinks, you woke up tired. And that's the way it is. That's the way you are. Let nobody judge you. Now, this is very important because the way people use their minds, they waste their minds on criticizing themselves and feeling bad over nothing. So I'm feeling bad. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. Oh, I should have done that. I should have done that. Just leave it alone for a minute and let's look at it. Step number one. So step number one is to see the whole picture. You want to see it. You want to understand it without judging it. If you're doing this with a friend, you want to see it. You want to do it without getting advice. Very difficult to do with friends. That's why sometimes you need somebody on the outside. It's like writing a will. You know, you want to write a will and you want to say, okay, at the end of my life, I want to do this and this and this. You sit down with a lawyer. The first thing the lawyer says is, well, let's get all the facts. Where's your money? Where do we find it? How many people in your life? Before you start going through what you're supposed to do and what you're not be doing with your money, let's figure out what is. Well, that's what we're doing here. The first step is to figure out what is. Now, the second step is once you've learned that this knowledge can actually get you to identify things that you didn't know you could see, you find that you make different choices just by seeing what you do. Now, let's say, use the example of, I had four beers last night. Now, without even judging it, you go to a bar, you have a beer, and you say, well, now I see every time I have four beers, I wake up tired. I think today I'll just have two beers. And that's it. So you automatically begin to change just by being to observe. You're not telling yourself you should change. There's an automatic shift that takes place. This is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone. We're talking about what happens to people in their growth cycle, what happens to them as they grow. We're leading in our discussion to a secret part of us that doesn't want us to grow under any circumstances. And it's not your mother. Okay? Knowledge, number two. The journey of self-knowledge, of self-awareness, is so exciting. You perceive alternatives in every situation. People become more understandable and less confusing. The knowledge helps you develop positive relationships rather than negative relationships, and life becomes an adventure rather than a task. So consciousness is a beautiful thing. You get a clearer, better vision of the world around you. Every day you learn new aspects of yourself that you didn't even know existed before. You begin to understand who you are, and you'll also begin to see that you change if you want to. You can change. You appreciate yourself. You definitely become less critical, and you become increasingly self-confident, as most of you have done. Some of you say to me that you became less self-confident. Well, there was a period of your life where your self-confidence was based on nothing. You know, so you could have gone around boasting and strong and all that stuff, but there was no basis for it. As you get to see yourself more, appreciate yourself more, and I don't want to use the word love yourself more because I think that's overused, but if you just accept who you are, you begin to get easier in life. You begin to get easier in life. You begin to grow. You give yourself less problems. Now comes the third one, the important one, which is personal change. Here's where you develop a deep trust in yourself. You're willing to live with your realities rather than the fantasies of life. You appreciate people for who they are rather than for who you want them to be. So you stop taking people and trying to change them. You now see them and say, hey, wait a minute. I see you. You're a bum. I see you. You're you have no good intention. I see you. You're a harmful person. Okay. That's you. I don't want to get you to love your child anymore or love my child any more than you do, because that's not who you are. So you begin to see life as it is. And this whole idea of creating fantasies and trying to change people goes out of your life. It leaves. I'm not going to get them to be any better. If you have a father who never showed you love, and he couldn't show you love, and you're always looking for his approval, you give up. You say, I'd rather face what it's like to not have my father's approval. I'd rather face it. I'd rather deal with what's it like to be in life without a dad loving me, than always trying to get his approval. So in the third phase, the phase of personal growth, you kind of settle in with reality. And you find reality is really beautiful. It's really beautiful in so many different ways. Now, the funniest thing about the people who settle in for reality, they have a kind of a micro outlook on life. They start appreciating things like the color of a pen or a flower or something small that they may not notice anyway. I know people who are so nervous that when they walk in a room, they see nothing. Nothing. They see nothing but their own energy walking into a room. They don't see anything. They don't feel anything. I know other people who walk into a room and can see everything in there. And they could see if it feels even beautiful in the room or not beautiful in the room. They could sense the energy of the room. They're totally aware. Now, being an aware person is great. Being aware and nervous of danger is not the same, right? Being nervous doesn't mean you're aware. Being hypervigilant doesn't mean you're aware. Being paranoid doesn't mean you're aware. Being aware means you see things calmly, but confidently. I can handle it. That's the third phase. Now, that all sounds good, eh? You get so excited about yourself, you try alternatives to past behaviors that didn't work out well. At this point, even your therapist is no longer a teacher, but rather someone with whom you share ideas and realizations because you don't put them up on a pedestal. And this could take your entire life, or it could take a few years of learning according to where you're starting. Now, how long does it take is an issue. When did you start? There's a direct correlation between how much time you have spent being crazy and how much time it takes you to get sane. It's very simple. If you've been nuts for 20 years of your life, and that means living off the planet, not having anything what you're doing, just bouncing around from place to place or depressed, whatever it is that took you, how many years it took you to get where you are, it usually takes about, and I know this is going to be hard to believe, a third the number of years to undo it. So if you're 30 years old, and you say, how long is it going to take me to get really on this planet? You figure it's another 10 that's going to take. But in the long run, every year is better than the year before. So it feels better, 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 better. Is it ever over? I don't know.
Right, because you have stuff to unpack. And the more longer you're doing it, the more you have to unpack, and the more you have to examine, and the more you have to, you know, work through it. One step at a time.
Yeah. And there are experiences that have kind of solidly hidden themselves over time, little wounds, little damages that kind of hide themselves. And just like you say, they appear a little at a time. But it's okay, because when you're on a road to recovery, when you're on a road where you're getting better, it's beautiful. It feels, every inch of the way feels beautiful. So it's like a celebration.
And I have to say, as a therapist, I love being part of that process. It's very exciting to watch somebody have their life experience improve, you know, to feel more in control, to be able to really achieve their own happiness as they want, when they want.
You know, it's interesting. What's most interesting is to see, to be a receptionist in life. I think being a receptionist, which is part of, you know, you could even be a manager, being able to see people come and go is kind of an interesting thing from week to week. I'm sure being a receptionist in a medical office where people get better, you know, where you see a person coming in and they could barely walk one day and then they're walking in and they're hopping in, it's a really nice thing. Being able to do that in a therapy office is kind of a wonderful thing. Being able to see people getting better, if you see them once a week, you know, see their changes, which is kind of a nice thing. And for you as therapists, being able to watch them over a period of time is also wonderful. So this process, my friends, I know is useful to you. You could do it with or without help. very difficult without help, because the eyes that look at yourself are looking into the mirror with the very same eyes that are looking in the mirror. You see, you're looking, but if you're blinded, you can't see. That's where outside help helps. But the outside help cannot be somebody who is invested in your being one way or another. So if your husband wants you to stay home more often, he can't be telling you about who you are. You know, if your best friend is afraid of losing you to another best friend, she's not going to give you the feedback that's going to be of value to you. So they have to have very little interest. Therapists qualify as very little interest, except, remember, therapists make a living having you come back. See, I always have to be in question about the fact that they're getting you, they're saying things to you, but they're really part of making a living is they're coming, you're coming back and returning to them. So they have to feed you in a certain kind of way. Certain therapists, which are really good, are maybe very lucky, and they have a full practice, and they don't have to worry about that. And just off the top of my head, not including you, but, you know, Stephanie Dombra, she never changes her commitment. She's like there, and she's going to do her job. And there's some beautiful people here who do that, Joyce Korn and Bill Astwood. Just really some of the people I know. And then there are other people I know who, they're just sloppy. They don't really care that much. All they care about is, you know, will the client come back? Will the client pay me? And that's all they care about. So, but the profession is meant to help you see yourself. That's the idea of the profession. And it's just that there are good eggs and bad eggs, and you have to somehow get in there.
And I think one of the tricky things is that it's not always a comfortable experience, so the therapist has to help you be there and endure a kind of some level of discomfort, and you need to trust the therapist enough to know that the getting through the discomfort is going to get you somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know about that trust thing. Trust is overrated. You need to let the therapist prove to you that you could get through that thing.
How would you do that?
It's a big story, which we're going to have to talk about. Good question. We're going to take a short break, my friends. It is 1:30 here at WBAI. When we come back, I'm going to play you some music. I'm playing you some fast jazz today, and I'm playing this partially for Joyce, who's doing the engineering. And I can't help it, because I am playing you some of the masters in jazz playing together, doing things that are amazing, that I grew up with. Now, I watched this very thing take place, and it's John Coltrane doing Giant Steps with the most amazing people in the... it's not Giant Steps we're doing. No. This is Adler Blues. This one I didn't watch. But another amazing performance for you. Amazing. So even though it's jazz, my friends, some of you don't like jazz, listen up, because it's got to be special, because I'm bringing it to you, and I only bring you special music. We're going to take a short break. When we come back from the announcements, we'll play a little music, and then we'll continue, and we will take your phone calls later at 212-209-2900. You could start queuing up. Over to you, Joyce.
Uh-huh.
Would you believe that's Oscar Peterson on piano, J.C. Hurd on drums, Buck Clanton on trumpet, Lester Young on tenor, and Ray Brown on bass? Would you believe that group? Amazing, called Ad Lib Blues, from a long time together, from an album called Together. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with Lisa Aroni. Arnone. Here with the Positive Mind. We're talking about growth and this whole thing about personal growth. Now, the important thing about growth runs into this spot. Here's where we run into a very important thing about growth, which all of you should realize, which I think is one of the great things. Transference, right, and counter-transference. Two very big issues. Let's start it off. Lisa, go ahead.
Very useful, very important issues. So I'll start with transference, and you talk about counter-transference, right? So transference is about the fact that there are feelings that are developed in every relationship that have something to do with some other relationship from the past. So say when you go to your doctor or when you're in school with your teacher, how you relate to those people and how you feel about those people is connected to other feelings that you've had about authority, people in authority roles in your life, mostly parents.
Okay, mostly parents, right? So you're going to look back and you're going to see that there's some reflection. Transference is bringing to someone feelings that you've had about someone in the past. So, for example, if you had certain feelings about your sister, negative feelings about your sister, and you wanted to bonk her in the head all the time, and then you go on a job and you have somebody there who seems to be annoying you all the time, this could be a transference with your sister. And you can say, uh-oh, I've transferred the feelings from my sister and my sister's annoyance over to this person.
And the feelings are more intense than they should be, say in an office situation, when you start to feel, why am I feeling having such strong feelings about this person? That's a clue that it's a transference.
Perfect. And, of course, if you don't do it, you could have very intense feelings and not question it. And, of course, then you validate it. You say, because she wears short skirts. And it attracts the bosses. And you start making her wrong. Because did you hear what she said about the fact that she chooses that kind of mustard over Grey Poupon? You know, and then you just start getting angry and you build rational cases where it's really an issue of transference. So transferentially, one of the questions I ask my therapists or the therapists who work with me is when they see a new client, and I say to them on the actual intake page, I say to the therapist, who are you to this client transferentially? And every therapist, the new therapist, the amateurs, they come in and they write, I'm their best friend, transferentially. Those are the amateurs. Until you could write mom or pop, you haven't earned your salt as a therapist. You got to figure out where you are the mother to the person walking in, where you are the father to the person walking in. If they're older, figure they're parental, right? If they're equal and you're getting angry, you figure it's got to be some kind of a brother or a sister, right? And there's even sister transferential. Let's say you're very, very close to your sisters. Transference is not always bad. Transference is you're just bringing to something that is more than what you started, that belongs in that situation. So you may, for example, have a good friend, and you transfer a lot of your brotherly stuff to your good friend, or your positive, even your father stuff to your good friend. He's getting more than his dose of good stuff from you, but it's not harmful. The negative transference is another word. Negative transference is when you bring unresolved negative feelings from the past and someone in the past to the current situation. So transferentially, everybody, when they go to see a teacher or they go to see a supervisor or they go to see somebody else, everybody runs into transferentially, that person is like somebody from my past. Negative transference is when you're starting having a negative reaction to them because they do it. Now, I know a man who hates anybody with a mustache. You know, and it took a while for me to say to him, so who had a mustache in your family? And he said, well, his uncle. Turned out his uncle abused him. All right, so then, therefore, but what he did in life is he hated everybody who had a mustache. It's like, of course it has such power on you. So that's transferentially. Now, transferentially, a lot of people you'll meet in life, and a lot of you listening are going to be aware of this. Somebody starts treating you like you're their mother. Ever have that happen? People come to you and they start expecting you to take care of them, to feed them, and they treat you in a certain kind of way. There's a word we have called countertransference. Countertransference is when the person responds to the transference you're laying on them as if they are the other character. Now, for example, somebody comes to me, sees me as an authority figure, and says to me, I have the best example of this, the best example of what happens when I go traveling speaking languages. It's a little complicated, but I can speak any language. There's a reason I can speak any language. Because if I go traveling to another country, there is one thing that you do. Let's say you go to France. And you go to France and you try to speak French to the French people, being just respectful, right? So you want to say, where is the hotel, the White Horse Hotel? And you say, où est l'hôtel de Cheval Blanc? What you're doing when you're speaking and when you're unsure of yourself is you're speaking like a child. When you speak like a child, it almost automatically engenders a parental response from the other person. And if they got a little bit of annoyance mixed up with their feeling towards Americans, they come back at you with a little tradition of a blanket, and they kind of discard you. And you feel bad because you said it wrong. You see, I don't speak French that way. I will walk up to another human and say, oh, I know we're two equals in my own mind. So I say, hey, où est l'hôtel de Cheval Horse Blank? Because it's the best I got. And strangely enough, everybody speaks back to me in a way that I understand. Because I give them an adult-to-adult transaction. Rather than going in as a child and having them become an adult. Bringing us back to what we're talking about in transference. In transference, when a person approaches you as if you are the adult and they are the child, when you start reacting to them as if they're children, then you're in countertransference. Countertransference is when you are becoming the thing they made you be. Now, so many of you will say, I'm not that way with people. I'm never dominant with people. And I know women who will say, I'm not a dominant woman. And then they have a guy who comes to them and starts treating them like you're their mother. They say you criticize them. They get whiny and then you finally, as a woman, you say, well, wait a minute, I'm sick and tired of this. You got to do it so we clean up and you become this person that you just shocked at yourself becoming. It's countertransference. It's like you become the person that you didn't want to be because that person is laying it on you, they're kind of setting this system for you. Now, as a therapist, it very often becomes, it's a situation where the clients come in, and they very often will do this with you, but they'll do this with you as a way of interfering with the very actual process of growth that should take place in the room. So what a therapist is aware of is they're always aware of transference. They're always aware of, okay, you're making me a daddy. Okay, you're making me a mommy. Okay, now how do we work with this? What do we do with this situation? You were talking about boundaries.
Yes. Well, I was thinking that part of a clue for the therapist is that you might find yourself wanting to respond in a way that wouldn't be typical of you. So as a therapist, you need to get some awareness of what's going on and try to stay in your therapist head, in your therapist role, and in yourself as you are.
So you're watching yourself, Lisa, react in a way that is abnormal for you.
Yes.
And you say, hey, that's not me doing this. And that's where you say to yourself, ah, I've joined the transference.
Right. Why am I doing this?
Okay. Yeah. Now you're not blaming the other person.
No.
You've just joined it because it's a system. So now that brings us to resistance.
And it's very useful in the work. It's very useful to start talking to somebody about what's actually going on in the room.
Oh, and not only even talk to them about it. I can't tell you the number of times somebody comes in to see me, and they're just nasty beings. Nasty, miserable, complaining, rotten, unhappy is the way they talk. So they talk, and I listen to them, and I go, oh, my God, this person is so unaware of themselves that I wish this time would end soon. And when I catch myself feeling like that, you know what I say to myself? I wonder how many other people feel this way towards this person, that they wish they would go away. I wonder how many people, how does this person get through life getting everybody to be annoyed at them? Because if I catch myself getting annoyed, I say this is part of their mechanism. This is part of their tool. This is what they do. They get everybody annoyed, and that's why they haven't been able to find any help. So I catch myself, and I don't necessarily let myself buy into that annoyance. In fact, I rarely feel annoyed. Almost never feel that feeling, because I could usually see it as part of the game. But what is the game? The game is called resistance, and this is important. We need to get to this. For every part of us that wants to change, there's a part of us that doesn't want us to change. There is a part of us inside each one of us called the engineer, that I call the engineer. The engineer is this part of you that is running the show. It wants you to stay physically alive. It believes that whatever you went through in the past, if you repeat it, you're going to go through it again in the future. It believes that if you once trusted somebody and they betrayed you, the next person is going to betray you. The engineer is always at work making sure you do not make changes. It wants you to take the standard defensive reactions. It occupies 5 floors of your 5-story building. It's on the top floor, the second floor, the third floor. It's in your basement. It's always watching to make sure that you do not change. So every time you try to make a change, the engineer comes up and gets you. Like, let's say you're on a diet. Let's say you feel you're too fat. Right? The engineer's been there the entire time you've been eating all that pizza. Right? It hasn't complained very much. Just makes you feel a little bad in the middle. But then you come time to say, no more pizza. I'm not going to have any pizza for a while. I'm not going to eat any carbohydrates for a while. The engineer, not only getting your stomach to work for him, right? Or her, he said, all right, let's throw some signals to the stomach. That's not good enough. Right, let's send a message to the head that you're depressed and you deserve to have something good. No, that's not good enough. See, this engineer could wield, or it has all the weapons. It has movies. It has your nose. Let's get them to smell garlic. Right? As if a whiff of garlic comes past them, you know? And the engineer is working at you all the time so that you could go back to the way you were. Instead of doing this thing, which you're doing, it's starving your body. You're trying to deprive yourself of something so that you can get to another goal. But you want change, and the engineer does not want you to change. So let's say that you want to spend the night alone as opposed to spending it with somebody you don't really want to be with. In the middle of the night, the engineer will get you to call up somebody, do an email to somebody, send a text message to somebody who you shouldn't be in contact with because you know it's miserable, because the engineer wants you to stay the same. Stay the same is the message. So how do we get out of that? Now, therapists have to deal with that all the time. How do we get away from these people? How do we get away from that part of us that wants to change, stay the same all the time? How do we deal with it? Well, a lot of people say, well, screw you, engineer. I'm going to take pills, and I'm going to take diet pills. And they take diet pills, and they lose 20 or 30 pounds, right? And then as soon as the diet pills are over, the engineer comes back and says, ah, gotcha, 20 or 30 pounds come back, plus another 10. So that doesn't work. Fooling the engineer doesn't work. Kicking out the engineer doesn't work. There's only one way you can do it, and that's negotiating with the engineer. How do you negotiate with an engineer? You say to the engineer, listen, this time I'm going to stay alone and I'm not going to go. I'm not going to eat any food at night. I'm not going to go on the computer. I'm not going to send any messages. And tomorrow I will. But just for tonight, let's try it. When you start talking to the inside of yourself as if you were talking to a part of yourself that's a little child that's just screaming, stay the same, stay the same, stay the same. When you start doing that, then you start getting some sympathy back from them. And the engineer says back to you, all right, I'll try it, but don't trick me. And you never trick the engineer. If you're trying to stop smoking and you say to the engineer, okay, we're just going to stop smoking today, but we'll pick up a couple of cigarettes tomorrow. You be sure to pick up those cigarettes tomorrow. Because if you've got that engineer and you're working with that engineer, you need its collaboration. Tricking the engineer is not a good thing to do, number one. Number two, therapists tricking the engineer is not a good idea to do, which is why hypnosis is not necessarily a good idea for psychotherapy. Hypnosis is tricking the engineer. It's getting underneath it, getting to the person, being to their unconscious, cutting through their resistance to find things that happen. The engineers don't like that too much. It may work in a case or two, but I really don't think it's the best way to go about it.
I usually talk to people about this as exercising a muscle, that you need to develop a kind of strength in this muscle of doing something new. So you just practice. You just try it and see how, you try it for a little while, and then you try it again, and every time you try it, it's a little easier, and maybe you could do it a little longer.
Good. And, you know, there's the Ilana Rubinfeld, old Feldenkrais method, which is also very interesting. Let's say you have two arms of your body, two parts of your body, and you lay down on a mat, and they're trying to find out what's wrong with your body, and they say one part is out of whack with the other because this part is strong and this one is weak. The Feldenkrais method is not to weaken, to strengthen the weak side. The Feldenkrais method is you weaken the strong side and you let the other side come in balance. So one way to do it is the way you're saying it, Lisa, which is, okay, we're going to do this like an exercise. But the other way is to think of the engineer weakening itself and asking the engineer, can you lay off a little bit? Can you just lay back for a few minutes this time? And that by doing that, you let the other part grow mm-hmm. as well. So they both are effective. Well, this is Armand DeMille with Lisa Aroni, Arnone. Can I tell you why I keep calling you Aroni?
Yes.
Did I tell you?
No.
Because I know Dr. Aroni, good old friend of mine, and I used to call him that all the time. So I'm see the name and it gets close, but I'm going to, maybe forever, Arnone. Please don't consider it a personal insult ever.
Okay, I won't.
Thank you. This is Armand Aroni with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5. We've been giving you classes. Now, these are four classes in a row that we've had. I would like to hear back from email, not just on Facebook, please, because there are so many people on Facebook, it's hard to even read the messages. So could you send me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com, which gives me feedback on this style, on what we've done with you. It's been pure lecture, but of course there's so much to teach and so much to do. We'll also be taking we're responding to your emails. Be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. This is Armand DeMille with Lisa Aroni. Bye-bye for now.